This is Jay Sekulow. Updates on the Florida recount and tensions brewing in the Middle East.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
All right, so it sounds like here we go again, but let's give you the latest update on the situation in Florida. We're going to talk about two issues today, the Florida recount. The Arizona race is over. The Senate Democrat was successful in that thing. How did that end up shaking out?
It was about a 1.5% margin. Martha McSally conceded to Kyrsten Sinema yesterday, Jay. So that means that the Democrats have now flipped a second seat. They flipped Nevada on election night. Now they've added Arizona to that column for a second seat that they've flipped. And of course, Jay, we're going to shift to the race in Florida. There's still a question about how many seats Republicans flip from Democrat to Republican.
Now here's the issue on Florida. We sure love to hear from people in Florida. Give us a call at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Tell us what's happening down there in your neck of the woods, because there's certainly a lot of attention. I want to focus on Arizona for a minute. And let me go to our director of policy, Harry Hutchison. Traditionally, Arizona has been a red state. That is not the way it went here.
Absolutely not. And I think Arizona is beginning to trend toward purple. However, I would point out that the Republican candidate for governor, as I understand it, won handily.
300,000 votes, I think.
So this was a particularly bitter Senate race, relatively close, but at the end of the day, the Democrat prevailed.
Our producer, Will Haynes, said this was the first time a Democrat had won a Senate seat in Arizona in 30 years. Now, it's so unusual, you think about this, Stan, that the idea that you had a situation like this where you had the governor win by almost 300,000 votes, which is significant, and then the senator lose by thousands.
Well, it's also an interesting situation, Jay, because there are a couple of seats in Arizona that are in play. Remember, John Kyle is temporarily filling a seat, and he has said that he's going to step down at the end of this year. We don't know. He doesn't have to do that, Jay, but there's a scenario in play now where Martha McSally might be the front runner to be appointed by Governor Ducey to that Senate spot. Now, that's all speculation. The bottom line is, I think much like Indiana, Arizona is now a battleground state. Now, remember, Indiana kind of in the other direction, Jay. That went from Democrat to Republican, and Mike Braun won there fairly handily. So what do you have? Every couple of election cycles, you have a demographic shift, you have a partisan shift, and you have a new set of battleground states. And I think Indiana and Arizona are now firmly in that camp.
One of the things I'd like to point out, you know, if you look at just kind of the patterns here, Florida, of course, still significantly in play, but West Smith, Georgia is still in play as well, your home state.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there, including this judge's 56-page ruling about the election. Abrams, though, she's behind Kemp 48.7% to his 50.2%, just to force a runoff, because in Georgia you have to have half the vote plus one. Just to force a runoff, she would need 20,000 additional votes.
I don't see it.
I don't see it happening, Jay.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think Georgia, close race. I mean, you got to hand it to Stacey Abrams. She ran a good race because Georgia, traditionally deep red state, ends up with a almost tie for the gubernatorial. What do you think the message in this is, then, for the GOP?
I think it's the message that we said when we were leading up to the election. You can't take any of these races for granted, Jay. I mean, you look at all the prognostications, you look at all of the turnout numbers, and you know that some of these states are going to be very close, but you don't know exactly which ones are going to be within this margin of error. So, you know, the Georgia governor's race this close, you always expect Florida to be close, but I think the message for the GOP is you have to compete for every single vote, even in states, Jay, that might not be on the prognosticator maps.
You know, it's interesting there, and we can tell you that every vote makes a difference. Boy, you see it in a number of these states when it's this close. There is controversy in Florida. We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break, and we want to hear from you. We've already got some calls coming in from Florida. 1-800-684-3110. One of those stations down in Orlando, Miami, Panama City, the I-4 corridor, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Jacksonville. Give us a call. 1-800-684-3110. We want to know how you're reacting to all of this going on in your state. It always seems like that this is a group of counties that have trouble counting. And of course, now it's for governor and senator. We're going to talk about that. We're talking about the legal issues surrounding. We come back from the break. Again, we'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. That is 800-684-3110.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Problems in Florida, the Sunshine State. A little sunshine down there shows a lot of election irregularities, or certainly looks like it. Let me give you the latest statistics. Than, do you have the latest numbers on who's where?
I do, yeah. So
let's talk with the governor's race.
Okay, you want to start with the governor's race. First of all, Jay, anything that's under a 0.5% triggers this automatic machine recount.
Right.
So in the governor's race, you have Ron DeSantis leading Andrew Gillum by almost 34,000 points. That's a differential of about 0.4%. Now, at election night, Jay, DeSantis was ahead of the recount margin. In other words, the margin was greater than 0.5%. Now it's inside that margin, so 0.41% to be exact.
All right.
On the Senate side, Governor Rick Scott has about a 12,500 vote lead over Senator Bill Nelson. So the interesting thing about that, Jay, of course, that's well inside the 0.5% margin for a recount, for a machine recount, but it's actually inside the 0.25% requirement for a manual recount. So here's how that would work. Both of those races are in a machine recount. If they were to come back in the same margins that they're in now, the Governor DeSantis would become governor without another recount. However, Governor Scott would actually have to go to a manual recount to determine the new holder of the Senate seat.
Yeah, it's unreal. All right, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Jackie is calling from Florida. Where in Florida, Jackie?
I'm in Palm City, Martin County, just north of Palm Beach County.
Beautiful area. Have a little trouble counting down there, apparently.
Well, yeah, I guess so. It's sort of typical of Palm Beach County and Broward County, which is kind of why we moved up to Martin County. Unfortunately, I had been in a lot of post-divorce situation with my children down in Palm Beach County for 10 years, actually. And what I found was in the courts, if you're looking for justice and if you're looking for fairness and if you're looking for truth, it didn't happen for me. And so I'm not shocked, actually. I'm not shocked at what's happening.
So here's what happens in election. I mean, the question is due process questions. It's equal protection of the law questions. And Harry, it turns into fairness. The fundamental issue here is, like a statewide recount, which is triggered by the state law there. It basically, at this point, courts are, in a sense, supervising some of this.
Absolutely. And so the 14th Amendment comes into play. Certainly it's come into play in the Georgia case. Certainly it will come into play in Florida as well. But the fundamental issue, it strikes me, is that at the state level, the federal government cannot ensure basic competence for state officials. And so I think Republicans going forward will have to rethink about state officials who are doing the actual counting. Are they indeed accountable? Are they indeed competent? And perhaps new procedures need to be put in place, particularly in Florida, but perhaps in Georgia, to assure to ensure accountability going forward.
What? Let me go to Wes on this. Again, going back on the Georgia situation, what is your sense from your friends in Georgia on what's happened here? You think it's just a demographic shift that's made this race in a short period of time this close?
Yeah, perhaps. I think the idea of having the first female governor and the first black female governor probably played into it as well is interesting. You know, during the break, Than was mentioning that it's important to turn ballots in on time. Part of what's going on in Georgia, Jay, is that in Cobb, Fulton, DeKalb, and Gwinnett counties, those four counties, which are heavily Democrat, the votes were not submitted to the Secretary of State by the date of November the 11th. The last election, there was only 12,151 provisional ballots. This time, there's 21,180 provisional ballots.
That seems very odd.
Yeah, it seems very, very odd. Out of the 1,566 provisional ballots in Fulton County, which is Atlanta, 1,000 of them were rejected as not being valid. And so there's just there's potential shenanigans going on, which is why Mr. Kemp, you know, filed this lawsuit that the judge
issued.
I think
it was smart. I think, look, she ran a good race, so you can't say anything about Stacey Abrams running a good race. She ran a good race, and she may come out. It looks like she's going to come up a little bit short, but it's a message in there for the GOP, I think, too. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110, Florida, Arizona, and Georgia. We really love to hear from you. So we're going to do just that. We're going to go to Renee in Arizona. She's on line four. Hi, Renee.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi. I live in Arizona. I live in Maricopa County. And I'm really upset about how our elections have gone. You know, there is no way that we are a blue state. We're a red state. Now, I realize a lot of changes go on, but you don't have, if you look at the numbers between the governor's race and the Senate race,
about that,
the numbers don't jive. Yeah, I mean,
well, you had 300. I think the governor won, the governor, if I'm not mistaken, Renee, won by close to 300,000 votes. Will, can we check that number? I think it was close to 300,000. And then McSally lost by, was it 40,000?
About 40,000, yeah. Look, these kind of things happen. It's not straight ticket voting. I would tell. I understand what the caller is saying.
It is a big number, though.
It is a big number, and I would look to the campaign statement, though. I think Martha McSally yesterday said it about right. Her campaign was given access to ballots in this final counting that did not happen in Florida. I'm concerned about what's happening in Florida, Jay, because of the track record of the people involved and some of the very legitimate claims there. Now, I'm not saying, I can't tell you with certainty I wasn't there, that Arizona was legitimate, but I can tell you this. The Martha McSally campaign looked at it, and they believe that it was legitimate. So I think you're talking about two very different things in Florida and Arizona.
Now, I think Arizona, I think the Republican candidate for Senate lost.
I do, too.
I mean, I think, Harry, that's how, I mean, just looking at the numbers, I think she lost.
Absolutely. And the campaign was highly contentious. And the poll numbers before the election showed that the two candidates were very, very close. And it strikes me that in Arizona, the voters decided to issue a split decision.
That's exactly right. Now, the question is, you know, Wes, this is the question that everybody's asking, and it's a legitimate one, and the caller's question was a legitimate one. It wasn't like the governor won by 25,000 votes against the Democratic challenger. It was close to 300,000 votes, and that makes everybody, but it also tells you people are not voting straight party ticket.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And McSally was a strong candidate. You know, the odds were that she was going to win. She is a former F-16 fighter pilot, member of Congress. I think her concession yesterday, she was actually back in D.C. because she had a vote coming up in the House of Representatives, was very gracious. And she doesn't seem to suspect any malfeasance that went on. But it was a close race, and everyone thought McSally would win.
It was a close race in one sense. I would agree with you. It was a close race in one sense, in the sense that it was pretty much tied, right? I mean,
correct.
She lost by, what is it, 30,000, 40,000 votes?
Yeah, about
40,000?
About 40,000, yeah.
But the governor did win by almost 300,000. Go ahead.
The governor ran a lot closer to the leader of the party, President Trump. Martha McSally, you can criticize it. You can say it was a good move or a bad move, but she chose not to run as close to the president.
Well, that was a bad move for her. She lost the election.
It looks like it. Look, I think here's one of the takeaways, Jay. I think the GOP needs to make sure that they have a unified message going into each election. Not just the GOP, by the way. The Democrats, too. You run on a party ticket. You need to run on a unified message. And when you see candidates diverge from that unified message, I think that's when you get these split results. I think if you look at the results between the governor and the Senate race, I think the conclusions are fairly easy to draw there.
I think that's right. All right, let's go to Tammy, who's calling in Florida. We're taking your calls, by the way, Florida, Arizona, Georgia, 1-800-684-3110. Come on, Georgia, give us a call. Let us know what's going on there. Tammy's calling from Hollywood, Florida. Go ahead, Tammy.
Hi, Jay. I just wanted to say that my husband and I voted on the actual voting day, and we live here in Hollywood, Florida, and Brenda Snipes is our election official.
Right.
The point is that when we were voting, we noticed before we were leaving that one of the machines was being wrapped up and taken away. We proceeded to ask the officials what they were doing with the machine, what the issue was. They said that it malfunctioned, and we proceeded to ask them if the votes would be counted. They shrugged their shoulders and didn't say a word to us.
Well, so, what you need to do is report that. You need to report that to your county officials and to the Secretary of State's office, because this is where shenanigans happen. I'm glad you called, because that's exactly how shenanigans in voting happens. Oh, this machine's not working, and then they don't count the 15,000 votes that were made in that particular county. Now, I'm not saying it happened there or not, but I'm just saying these are things, you need to check.
I'm worried about it, Jay, and here's why. I mean, Brenda Snipes, who's the Broward County Supervisor of Elections, has an obligation under state law to tell the public how many votes were cast on Election Day. Initially, that number was reported as 695,000. It's continued to go up since then, and now the latest reports are that there are 715,000. So somewhere along the line, she or her staff came up with an additional 18,000 votes. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's literally the number that's being reported. I don't know where those came from, and one of the other problems, Jay. A ballot like the one the caller is talking about, those are the ballots that the campaigns need to have access to so that there is a counting of them. Both parties can look at it and make sure there are no, to use your word, shenanigans going on. I don't trust it in Florida, Jay, because Brenda Snipes has proven incapable of doing it before.
All right, we're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. I really want to hear from Florida, Arizona, and Georgia. Others can call too, but we really want to hear from those three states. So if you're in Florida, Arizona, or Georgia, give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. And don't forget the ACLJ and the Matching Challenge campaign. Any match you donate to the ACLJ, we get a matching gift for. The best way for you to do it, the easiest way, is just go over to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. You make that donation, it's tax deductible. We get a matching gift. We'll take your calls at 800-684-3110 when we come back.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
All right, so Arizona done. The Democrat wins there. And that means that the Republican pickup in the Senate could go up to a total of 53. So that is, I think, likely where it's going to come out if Florida holds true. But we got a lot of calls coming in from Florida and a couple coming in from Georgia as well. So let's go right back to our phones. Let's go to Kim in Florida. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Hey.
Yes, I'm calling about possible provisional ballot fraud in Florida.
Okay.
Yes, I actually, somebody had posted on one of the many sites I look at that they had done some snapshots of this particular lady's Facebook page out of Orlando. She works for the Democrat Party. I went on to make sure that it was an actual Facebook page, and it was. It's legit. And she had a posting on November 7th about the Get Out the Provisional Ballot. This was a campaign they were doing to go door to door and make calls for people that I assume had voted provisional ballot, but they were also training people on how to use affidavits, which I believe those are only supposed to be used by the, at the polling places. So I believe they were possibly going door to door with provisional ballots for people that did not actually come to the polls after the fact.
I'm glad you told us that, and those should all be reported. But Harry, that's where the courts have to supervise the process of what's going on here, and that's to find out what exactly took place.
I think that's absolutely correct. I think initially the election officials have to supervise the process, and then the courts have to oversee them. And I think Florida, by and large, going back almost 20 years, has proven at times to be incapable of actually exercising due process with respect to counting each and every legitimate vote. On the other hand, Florida seems to have a propensity at times to count votes that may not necessarily have been made, or at least they weren't made on time. Also, it's
Miami-Dade, important, Palm Beach County, and Broward seem to not have
absolutely
trouble doing math.
I mean, this is a cycle that continues. And so we need to root out the corruption or incompetence or both in all of those counties.
All right, let's go ahead and take another call. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Again, Georgia, Florida, Arizona. We're focusing on Lisa's calling from the state of Georgia. Lisa, welcome to the broadcast. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Cochran, Georgia.
Okay. You are on the air.
First of all, I'm embarrassed for our state of Georgia. I just saw on the news where we have now got another delay with having an end to the provisional ballots, as they call them. You know, and voting is a privilege. We are educated in Georgia. We know that if we have not registered to vote, that we need to call and see. I'm a cancer survivor. There were times where I did not get to vote. So I had to call and say, hey, look, am I on the registry? So I think that they're undermining our mentality here. It just overwhelms me. And I just, it sickens me that one individual has,
let me tell you this about, first of all, don't lose hope in the system, and that's why the courts are also engaged in this, and we'll see what happens. But I think the Georgia race, Wes, you can't say anything about the Democratic nominee other than she ran a very close and competitive race.
Yes, she did.
Or this wouldn't be an issue. If you were ahead by 20 points, you wouldn't be worrying about this.
Exactly. Yeah, she ran a good race, a close race. She had a lot of support from outside the state, both people appearing for her and then financially. Here's the thing, though, Jay. People need to have faith in their election process. You were talking about Florida earlier and Brenda Snipes in Broward County. She has a record of either extreme incompetence or extreme crookedness. In 2004, for example, Jay, she lost 58,000 absentee ballots. It is a known fact that most absentee ballots come from service people and their families who are stationed overseas, and most military people, guess what, happened to vote Republican. In 2016, when Debbie Wasserman Schultz had a strong contender in the Democratic primary, Snipes' office They they destroyed ballots, even though there was an investigation going on. The court had ordered them to preserve the ballots.
You even have on this past Friday that she mixed 22 rejected provisional ballots with a batch of around 200 valid ones. She deemed it accidental, but said the bad ballots, due to the signature mismatches and other reasons, couldn't be identified. So, I mean, Sam Thance here shaking his head. This really is absurd.
Well, there's where 22 of the votes came from that they just found. But, Jay, again, in her county alone, they found 18,000 votes from the number that they said they had on election night. And, again, if it was her first problem, it would be one thing. But let me just read for you very quickly a quote from Jeb Bush, who actually appointed Brenda Snipes originally. He said, "There is no question that Broward County Supervisor of Elections Brenda Snipes failed to comply with Florida law on multiple counts." And we could run through those, Jay. "Undermining Floridian confidence in our electoral process. Supervisor Snipes should be removed from her office following the recounts." I completely agree with Jeb Bush. By the way, I think it sets it apart from Virginia or from Georgia. I don't think the caller in Georgia should be ashamed of their account. There's actually another week to go before the certification deadline.
They're going to make it.
I suspect Georgia will certify on time.
I think it'll be the Republican will win, but she ran a good race. That's all I could say. Jeff's calling from Florida on line one. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, I just wanted to say that it is becoming so blatant and so bold, I think, what's happening, to the point where the Democrat candidates here in Florida are wanting to make sure that non-citizen votes are counted. Where does that come from? How is that even something we should consider?
Lawful votes should be the votes that are counted, Professor Hutchinson. There's a qualification to exercise and execute a ballot that has to be followed through by law.
Absolutely. And one of the things, though, that we should seek to ensure is that the law indeed is followed. But in Florida in particular, there are instances upon instances which suggest that the law was not followed. And so we need to remove voting officials who cannot follow or will not follow the law, and that needs to be done expeditiously, and it should have been done before this election campaign got off the ground.
Let's grab a last call before the break here. Shirley's calling from Arizona on line two. Hi, Shirley. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling because I don't like what went on in Arizona. Kristen Sinema should have never won. I'm very sorry. Dumpley should have won. They have the county, the recorder. He, his name's, I forgot.
Doesn't matter. Go ahead. Sorry.
Whatever. The early voting was supposed to stop November 2nd with the ballots, the early ballots and everything. You couldn't turn in anything until Tuesday, November 6th. He took it upon himself to open them up on the weekend. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, there was 8 polling places. South Phoenix, Avondale, certain different places in Mesa. He opened them all up and had them on the news on the weekend.
Yeah, I don't want to get too lost in the fact. Than is going to give you some law here.
Yeah, the deadlines are for when those ballots have to be received, not opened and counted. So I suspect that even in the example you're giving, that's probably okay. But again, Jay, I'd point to the disparity with the governor's race. A Republican ran for governor and won handily.
326,000. So. Actually, the exact mix was 323,000 votes differential for the governor's race for the Republican one, Ducey, and of course the Senate race lost. So it tells you something about campaigning. All right, coming up after the break, we're going to get into there's a lot of rockets going off in the Middle East. Tough time in the neighborhood. We're going to get into that for you as well. We have an office in Jerusalem. And by the way, when you support the work of the ACLJ, you keep us on the forefront on all of these issues, all these constitutional issues, including what's going on in the Middle East as well. You make a donation this month, and we get a matching gift. Do that at ACLJ.org. You donate $20, we get $40. That's how it works. So we encourage you to do that. ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
So I get this alert that I have on my iPhone that lets me know when there's rockets being launched into Israel. And I will tell you, yesterday, that alert, the red alert it's called, you should download the app. It's a fascinating thing to watch. You understand what the Israelis are living with every day. Well, here's what happened. There was a series of these. Upwards of 300 rockets came in yesterday. The militant group Hamas, which is controlling still most of the Gaza Strip, pledged to actually increase the attacks on Israel for, quote, its aggression. The threat from Hamas came as the Israeli military said it was carrying out a wide-scale strike on military targets throughout the Gaza Strip, and the Palestinians kept up their most intense rocket fire since 2014. Now, I've been in the region when that has happened. We have been there when that has happened. Stuart Roth is with me in our headquarters here in Washington, D.C. Stuart, we've experienced these rocket attacks firsthand.
You know, and you know where this money is coming from to propel these rockets from Iran. That's why the Iran sanctions are so important, Jay. But yeah, we've been there numerous times. This is Israel's neighbor, unfortunately, who is devoted to destructing the state of Israel. They don't want peace. It's in their constitution. They want to destroy Israel. It's not about settlements. It's not about this. It's not about that. They really look at the entire Israel as being one big settlement that needs to be recharacterized to another Arab state.
Yeah, they want the destruction of Israel. They say that in the Hamas charter, by the way. It's as clear as you can be. Wes Smith is our military senior military analyst, a colonel in the United States Army, retired. The reports are that it's actually 400 rockets or mortar bombs across the border from Gaza into Israel after carrying out, this was after the Israelis carried out an attack on Hamas leadership, killing one of the Hamas leaders. What's your sense of this? And I'm going to give you some personal experience of being down in that actual region when that has happened.
Yeah, thanks, Jay. I had to turn off my red alert because it kept going off all night long, waking me up. But Hamas, you know, of course, is a terrorist group. They are estimated to have over 20,000 rockets and mortars in their arsenal. And Stuart's right. They fired yesterday a laser-guided anti-tank round at an Israeli bus. That's the first time that's happened. They threatened at the same time that they were going to use more advanced projectiles, they call them, to bring about what they're saying is 1 million Zionists within range of their rockets. This laser-guided technology and this sophisticated guidance system that they're threatening to use is what we discovered 2 months ago that Iran was supplying both to Hamas and Hezbollah. So Iran's fingerprints are all over this. I think it's pretty disingenuous for Hamas to say that that Israel started this by sending that undercover unit into the Gaza Strip. They went into the Gaza Strip because Hamas continues to stage violent demonstrations at the border. They continue to send incendiary kites into Israel, thousands of acres
explain
of land.
Hey, Wes, I think it's important for you to explain to our audience, because this is a new technique they utilize, these incendiary kites. These are basically a kite that then catches areas on fire. Explain to people what this is. Again, this is another aspect of warfare.
Yeah. It's very simple. It's easy to do, and they have flown literally hundreds of kites over into Israel. You wait till the wind direction is right. You put what basically is a Molotov cocktail kind of device on it with a very, very long cloth or string fuse so that it takes a while for the actual fuse to get into the fuel, use gasoline or whatever, and then it explodes and the fuel spreads everywhere. And like I said, thousands of acres of land and several buildings in Israel have been destroyed by these kites. So Israel sent this unit into Gaza, this intelligence unit, undercover, because they're trying to stop this violence, not only at the border, but that's spilling across into Israel. Hamas fired on the unit, and that's how this started. And it's pretty disingenuous for them to say, well, we'll stop this when Israel stops the aggression. The aggressors are Hamas.
I'm going to try to see if we can get David Benjamin and Rami Levy from our office in Jerusalem on in the next couple segments of the broadcast, so we'll be working on that. Let me tell you this. We're taking a break. When we come back, we're going to take more of your calls and more information. We're going to talk about the situation in Israel. What does it mean for the greater region? Also, what does it mean for the greater national and international security? But also, don't forget the matching challenge of the ACLJ. Any amount you donate to the ACLJ, we're getting a matching gift for you. Do that at ACLJ.org. Let me tell you what's great. We've got an office in Jerusalem that works on these issues right there in the region. Ministry of Presence, right there. An ACLJ office in Jerusalem. You can help support it, ACLJ.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu convened a security cabinet meeting today to discuss the situation after cutting short his visit to Paris to return for emergency talks. Meanwhile, the U.S. envoy to the Middle East, Jason Greenblatt, weighed in on the clashes, saying the U.S. stands with Israel as it defends itself from Hamas. Quote, this is what Greenblatt said in a tweet, "The world is fed up with Hamas violence and the violence of other actors in Gaza." The fact of the matter is that this is their modus operandi. These, you talked about incendiary kites. We talk about these bombs. By the way, one 40-year-old man was killed, a civilian. Right. This is what happens. I've been there when they are coming in. You have 14 seconds to get into a shelter. Jordan and a couple of our colleagues were actually outside of the shelter because they were not able to get in a shelter in time in that 14-second period. And mortar landed about 40 yards away from them. A shell came in. So they experienced it firsthand. So this is real. This is, but then the idea that Israel doesn't get to defend itself is absurd.
Well, Jay, I mean, these mortar attacks, you know, are coming in monthly. I mean, they increase in size over certain periods of the year, and we see a constant barrage from Gaza. But the other issue that we have to discuss is this humanitarian crisis in Gaza. 1.5 million Palestinians are suffering at the hands of the leadership. Also, the Egyptians, they classify Hamas as a terrorist group. Yep. So on both sides of Gaza, there are problems. And there are problems with the leadership that is supported by Iran. And I think, again, we have to tie everything back to Iran because there are embargoes on Gaza. And they're getting weapons, they're getting arms, they're getting cash, and they're getting it from Iran. If you cut off Iran, you're going to cut off a lot of the issues here in Gaza.
Wes, you know, we know this, that one of the main, probably the main factor for funding is the Iranians. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They are the largest state sponsor of terror. They support Hamas. They support Hezbollah in the north. But the fact is that they are, even with their economic sanctions in place and even with their economy hurting, the truth is, Wes, that as it stands right now, money flows out of Iran to Hamas, or these rockets themselves are developed in Iran.
Right. I was about to say that it's not just cash that's going there, but they are supplying weapons and technology. This advent of a laser-guided projectile that happened just in the last 24 hours, that has the potential, Jay, to be a game changer with the terror groups who attack Israel. Because up until now, the rockets and even the missiles that Hezbollah has fired have not—they're not guided. They're sort of lobbed in, and you hope that you might hit something. Iran providing them with guidance systems and with laser-guided anti-tank projectiles—that that puts Israel in a new new increased area of danger because of that. Iran's fingerprints are all over this. There is a reason why they are the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism. There's a reason why President Trump pulled out of that flawed agreement.
Well, and the point that Wes brought up is excellent, because on the other side of Israel, in Lebanon, we have Hezbollah that has hundreds of thousands of missiles. And again, the technology from Iran has increased significantly. So once upon a time, they were lobbing missiles into Israel from Gaza or from Lebanon, but they were missing. They were missing great vasts of people because they weren't sophisticated weapons. Now the weapons are sophisticated, and they are a real threat to Israel's sovereignty, to Israel's existence.
I think the other thing you have to consider here is what will happen after this conflict. The Palestinians will immediately run to the International Criminal Court in The Hague and file war crime complaints against the state of Israel. Meanwhile, they're flying incendiary devices on a kite over to civilian territories and killing civilians. So you ask yourself, Wes, I mean, we're one of the few groups in the world that have actually litigated a case in front of the International Criminal Court in The Hague. So a lot of people can talk about it, but we actually were counsel in a case which actually had what they called a NGO roundtable, where we made oral arguments before all of these international lawyers, the Office of the Prosecutor for the International Criminal Court. I did those oral arguments with three other lawyers on our side representing the interests of Israel, and four other lawyers representing the interests of the Palestinians. So a lot of people can talk about this, but there's few people that could say they actually did it, and we have. Now, what we know, and our team in Jerusalem working with our team in Virginia is doing right now at Regent University, they're putting together those briefs because we know for a fact that as soon as this tension calms down, which it does, these things become very cyclical, that we will now be faced with a challenge at the ICC.
Well, there's no doubt, because the way that the Palestinians, especially in Gaza, fight their wars is that they lob these missiles from hospitals, mosques, schools. So when Israel takes out these military bases, they're taking out civilians. And it is unfortunately the collateral, but the collateral is caused by the Hamas using citizens as human shields. So then they run to the International Criminal Court and say crimes against humanity, war crimes. And we know, it's been documented, Jay, how they fight their warfare. And they do this to provoke the court from looking into these humanitarian crises caused by the war that Hamas instigated.
So more than one rocket per minute had been fired from Gaza into Israel over the course of 2 hours. This is the reports of the IDF spokesman. Now, Wes, you've been in battle zones, and I've been in when these rockets have coming in. Let's explain to people what it would look like and sound like. We'll talk about what the Iron Dome does. When you have basically a rocket per minute being fired from Gaza into Israel. Every minute, a rocket being fired.
Yeah, I've been on deployments, combat deployments, where missiles were fired at the unit that I was in. It is frightening. I can't imagine one missile being, or one rocket fired per minute. It is really terrorizing. When the alarms go off, you know that a projectile, a missile, or rocket is in the air. What you do not know is whether or not it's going to land where you are. And it's very, very frightening. You know, Hamas, Jay, they really don't want peace. This all happened, this whole incident that flared up with them attacking the undercover unit on Monday, happened as Egypt and the United Nations and Israel were working together, trying to come up with a permanent peace and trying to get Hamas to stop launching projectiles across the border. This all happened right after the UN and Egypt and Israel were talking, and right after Qatar gave Hamas $15 million in humanitarian aid. They absolutely do not want peace. And Stewart's right. Their modus operandi is to use civilian areas for their weapons. And this latest thing, I was proud of the Israeli Defense Forces because they were very careful, not only as to the type of weapons they were using, but the time of their attacks, because Hamas routinely puts missile batteries in civilian locations, hospital, schools.
Right.
In this latest battle, Jay, their ammunition warehouse was housed with a kindergarten. And so Israel...
Say that again, Wes. I think it's very, very important. Say that again.
Yeah. In this latest round of attacks, Israel discovered that their ammunition warehouse for this latest battle was housed with a kindergarten. And I give Israeli Defense Forces credit. They were very careful in how they launched this attack, trying to minimize casualties. And they did that by the type of weapons they were using. And also, for example, with the kindergarten attacking at night when they knew that children and students weren't there.
So let me play for you some sound from Fox News, because as I told you, that's exactly what I predicted would happen. Barrage of rockets, then a ceasefire, then a challenge at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. We call that lawfare. Here's what Fox News said.
All of this as Egyptian negotiators are scheduled to come to the region tomorrow in an effort to bring Hamas and the Israelis back to the table and try to develop some sort of ceasefire agreement that could reduce some of the violence that has been erupting in the region.
So let me tell you two things. Number one, Egypt doesn't want Hamas there any more than the Israelis do. I mean, the Israelis and Egypt, believe it or not, but it is true, are allies, very close allies on this. So they don't want them there, number one. Number two, there's a pattern here. Let me lay out that pattern for you. Attack with missiles, Israeli response, ceasefire, challenge at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. What I'm telling you, those of you that support the work of the ACLJ, you allow us to engage this. Where? Right in Jerusalem. We've got an office right in the heart of Jerusalem. Literally blocks away from the wall, from the Temple Mount, is the offices of the American Center for Law and Justice, Jerusalem, staffed by professionals, including government affairs professionals and lawyers. Our senior lawyer there, David Benjamin, who may well be out on, he may have called him up on reserves. I know they're trying to get him. It may well be on reserves because he does a lot of the international law of armed conflict. David is a soldier and a lawyer and works with us. And we are fortunate to have him. Rami Levy heads up our entire government affairs operations there. So this is both a diplomatic issue and a legal issue. And your American Center for Law and Justice is front and center in all of it. And why I'm saying that is because we're in a matching challenge this month, and we're talking about, you know, in the first half of the broadcast, we're talking about the political situation going on, and here we're talking about what's happening in Israel right now, and your American Center for Law and Justice isn't just talking about the news. We are in the news. We are the ones that are going to court to defend Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state, to push back on these attempts by these organizations who can be very aggressive. To delegitimize the state of Israel. And that's what they utilize the courts for, to delegitimize the Jewish state.
Well, Israel, Jay, is always under persecution. Their existence is always being threatened from one border or the other border. And a substantial part of our practice is defending the rights of this, the only democracy in a very, very bad neighborhood. If you look at the countries surrounding Israel, this is not a good neighborhood, as they say. So we are there. We're in courts all over the world defending the existence of the state of Israel.
And we could do that because of your support to the American Center for Law and Justice. Let me encourage you to do something. November and December, two biggest months of the year, matching challenge campaigns. That means any amount you donate to the ACLJ, we're getting a matching gift for us. Let me ask you to do something. Go over to ACLJ.org right now. Make an online gift. It'd be $10, $20, whatever it is. If it's $20, it's $40. If you donate $50, we get a match for $50, makes it $100. So it's very good for us, very good for you. It's tax deductible. ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Back with the last segment in just a moment.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
So the reports are that 400 rockets landed in Israel in the last 24 hours. I have this thing called Red Alert. I've talked about it before. If it goes off today, I'm going to have it play for you if it goes off while we're on air. Right now it's a quiet time. That means they're reloading. That's what it usually means. One of the situations is that the Israelis took out a broadcasting headquarters. Of course, the Palestinian Authority said broadcasting, bombing our headquarters for broadcasting is a crime and will not deter us from our pioneering role in conveying the truth. This is about their broadcast station. The truth of the matter is that it airs programs and music videos designed to recruit children to become Hamas armed fighters and suicide bombers. The Treasury, this is our government speaking here, said will not distinguish between a business financed and controlled by a terrorist group, such as Al-Aqsa Television, and the terrorist group itself. So the fact that they are engaged in the business of broadcasting for their propaganda doesn't mean they're all of a sudden now off limits.
What nation, Jay, would tolerate 400 missiles being fired into their country at civilians? None. So when Israel fights back, and Israel is so tolerant, and you could see by the fact that there actually is a Gaza, and there is a territory there with people in it after they've been doing this for decade after decade, that the Israelis haven't leveled the entire state. So Israel is very, very tolerant, but when they do fight back, they end up in the International Criminal Court. They end up with international criticism for fighting back against Gaza, firing 400 missiles. Who would tolerate that?
Nobody would, but let me read something for you. So this is a Twitter feed from one of the directors of Aqsa TV, and they quoted a spokesman for Hamas, Al-Qassam, the Al-Qassam military wing, known as, and the guy's name is Abu Abidida. This is what he said. If the enemy persists in aggression, the resistance factions will, and these are quotes, expand the circle of fire, and about a million Zionists, that's what they call the Jews living in Israel, will be waiting to enter the circle of our missiles. That's the threat, Wes, from the broadcasters of Al-Aqsa TV.
Right, yeah. There's a reason why the European Union has forbidden Aqsa TV to beam their programs into Europe anymore. They were doing that for years and years. They're no longer allowed to do that. There's a reason that the U.S. Treasury Department has sanctioned this TV station and anyone who does business with them. Can you imagine, Jay, this television station, they have children's programming. Think of the children's programming in America like Sesame Street. This television station has children's programming where they encourage children to grow up to be suicide martyrs for the cause of Hamas. It's just unconscionable.
Let me read for you, our audience. This is off there. So they're all upset about the fact that the Israelis took out this broadcast station, which was basically promulgating the terrorism, which is a legal, lawful target. And this is what their children, they say, but this was for children's programming. Here's the children's programming. It's a kid show hosted by a young boy, and he's told to recite a poem which reads that he said he learned from his mother. He said, "My mother taught me this poem." The boy recites, "O Jerusalem, I shall redeem you with my soul and my blood. I shall liberate you from the Jews by any means of the Al-Aqsa Brigade." That's their military. "Of course, I bring glad tidings to our prisoners. Salvation is near. May Allah grant long life to such a mother," says the host. So let me read you that again. "O Jerusalem, I shall redeem you with my soul and my blood. I shall liberate you from the Jews by the means of the Al-Aqsa Brigades. I bring glad tidings to our prisoners. Salvation is near. May Allah grant long life to my mother." That's what the poem said. This is not children's programming. This is children becoming suicide bombers, which unfortunately, Stuart, we've seen time and time again. And talking about a violation of international law of war and armed conflict, there it is. Does anybody hold the Palestinian Authority? Whenever we raise those issues, the ICC does nothing.
And that's why there's an embargo on territories like Gaza. And our administration right here, we're really fortunate because they understand that. And so we should really start instituting broader sanctions, Jay, on all the countries that are pouring money into Gaza. And then they say it's for humanitarian aid, but the truth is these are the purposes for which it goes to.
Well, here's the rest of the poem.
Okay.
Okay. The host asks another young boy a question about what do you want to be when you grow up? An engineer, he replies. The host then says, an engineer? Why do you want to become an engineer? So that I can blow up Jews.
Right.
That's what the young boy said. So, yes, they took that operation out of existence, the Israelis, and it's called defense. And it's called dealing with the fact that this is what's causing the problem. And, Wes, I think that, you know, we look at that. We always say that when you're dealing with the Middle East, you got to think nine-dimensionally. But what I wanted to do on this 30 minutes of the broadcast today, this back half hour, was to go through this so you knew exactly, our audience knows exactly what's going on here. It's not just it's not a firecracker being launched over to Israel. These are real rockets. Now they're guided. They weren't before. These incendiary kites, which, again, Wes, I want you to explain, those are two new tactics, guided missilery and incendiary kites. Explain both.
Yeah, the guided missile part is the most frightening and the most game-changing development in all of this, because before now, the missiles and rockets that Hezbollah and Hamas had were not guided. You fire them up in the general direction, hope they hit something. With this sophisticated guided missile system provided by Iran, it changes. They can actually target specific neighborhoods, specific buildings. And then the kites are you know, rigged up with a time delay incendiary device, much like a Molotov cocktail. Thousands of acres of Israeli land and buildings have been destroyed by these kites. There's almost no way to defend against them. And think about it, Jay, and Stuart was right. What would we do if we had an enemy on our border that was firing rockets into the United States, that was burning thousands of acres of U.S. land? We would take a much stronger, more tough stand than Israel has taken, to be sure. You know, and they talk about how Israel has closed the border with Gaza. Egypt has closed the border also, because they right. also are fearful and do not support what Hamas is doing in the Gaza Strip.
Yeah, the problem, of course, is that they continue. They puts all of these governments in a very awkward and uncomfortable position.
Well, you know, geopolitical consequences of this, Jay, are significant. Of course, Egypt, they look at Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood as terrorist organizations. The Saudis do. Turkey, for some reason, our friend Erdogan in Turkey, he embraces Hamas for some reason. But there's all sorts of puzzle pieces moving around in that area. But Hamas is a destabilizing force. They're going to bring on something very, very brutal in response one day from Israel with all of these laser-guided missiles that are going to inflict one day, I think, serious injury on Israelis. And the Israelis are going to have no choice but to do some significant damage. And again, there'll be more humanitarian crises in Gaza, and they will blame Israel, and the photographers will be there taking pictures, but it'll all be self-inflicted by Hamas.
So let me go to this last thing with you, Wes. Again, when you've been in the region, Stuart and I have been in the region a lot. We have an office in Jerusalem. Tell people in just 30 seconds what it's like living under the threat and the reality of this kind of attack.
Yeah, it's almost unimaginable. And to the average American, they cannot imagine it. Having been in war zones where people were firing missiles and rockets at us, you live in this constant trepidation. You worry about your children going to school, about going outside to play, about simple things like going shopping. They do have bomb shelters all over the place, but you can't always get to them. It is truly a terror weapon being used by a terrorist organization.
And here's the thing I want to let you know. Our American Center for Law and Justice office in Jerusalem is right in the heart of this and right in the heat of the battle. Our lawyers and our government affairs team there are the best in the region. And as I say, we don't just talk about it here. We do it. We're in court. It's called lawfare, where our lawyers are engaged on international law of armed conflicts. Skip Ashkin be with us today. And, you know, is an expert in that area. David Benjamin, of course, is as well. Rami Levy, our director general, who's former ambassador. I mean, we have a top team. Your support of the ACLJ makes all of that possible. Let me ask you to do something. We're in a matching challenge for November. It's a big month, second biggest month of the year. Go to ACLJ.org. If you want to stand with us as we stand with Israel, ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate, we're getting a matching gift for. So we encourage you to do that again at ACLJ.org. Have a great day.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.